Well, good morning, church. Good morning, and I'm really deeply honored and humbled for this opportunity to share God's word on this special day of your 50th year of celebrating God's faithfulness in the life of the church and also in the ministry of Reverend Ken Miles and his dear wife, Sister Kay. I know over the years the Lord has used this church to bring so many to salvation, and many were brought to their knees, and many were blessed, but most importantly, many were summoned to serve in the vineyard, and I am one of them. And I've known Pastor Ken and Sister Kay for nearly 20 years now. Pastor Ken played a key role in the life of our church and also in my personal life. He was one of the three founding pastors of our church, Seekers Christian Fellowship, in 2007, and he used to come there on a monthly basis to come and speak and minister to our congregation. He ordained me as the minister of the gospel in 2006, and he partnered with me twice in the missions work in Sri Lanka. His book is still in circulation. He shared the word at my son's wedding ceremony. And he is the one I lean on when I'm burdened. And he was and he is a role model for pastors like myself. So let me begin by expressing my heartfelt gratitude to both KWCF and to Pastor Ken and Sister Kay for your investment in our spiritual journey. So this morning, I really consider it a great honor to share his pulpit. I'd like to share with you what it means to be a servant of God, a servant of God. Some traits that I've observed and learned from your pastor, but most importantly, from what the Lord has taught his disciples. Now, on the day of my ordination as the minister of the gospel, Pastor Ken, who officiated the ceremony, presented me with a towel, and I'm preserving this for the longest time. This is a gift that he gave me on the day of my ordination. And this is just to remind me of my role as a pastor, what I'm called to do. Just bear with me 1 minute. Okay. I think I messed up here something. Bear with me. That's the last thing any speaker wants when you're standing in front of all the people and when you're live on camera. But that's how the devil works, isn't it? Okay. No, this is a very powerful lesson and very convicting, and I'm still holding on to that. And I've told my family on the day that I leave this earth, this has got to come with me in my coffin. And I like to reflect on Jesus' narrative, the John's narrative, on Jesus washing the feet of the disciples from the Gospel of John, and see what traits that we can pick up from there. So I'm going to ask you, all of you, to turn in the Bibles to the Gospel of John, chapter 13. Gospel of John, chapter 13. We'll be looking at just a few verses, the verses 1 to 5. So let us understand the context now. John 13 marks a turning point in the narrative of the Gospel and the ministry of Jesus Christ. Sadly, Jesus' public ministry to the nation of Israel has come to an end here, with the nation's complete and final rejection of him as the Messiah. We see that in chapter 12, verse 37, but although he had done so many signs before them, they did not believe in him. They did not believe in him. What a sad situation it was. But we are here into the Passion Week, and now is the day before Jesus' death. And rather being preoccupied with the thoughts of his death and sin-bearing and glorification, as we read through this chapter, we see Jesus is totally committed or consumed with his love for the disciples. Jesus knew that he would soon go to the cross to die for the sins of the world, yet he is still concerned with the needs of the 12 men. Now, his love is never impersonal. That's the mystery of it. In our text today, we are going to look at two aspects of his love. And which I believe is a great lesson, not only for the leaders, but also for all of us as believers. Let me tell you what they are before we go into the next one. The first one, we are going to look at the definition of love. How we see the definition of love in this text. Verses 1 to 3, and the demonstration of his love, how he is demonstrating his love. So if you are looking at the definition of his love, the verses 1, if you look at chapter 13, verse 1, I'm reading from New King James Version. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, I want you to read the last part with me. He loved them to the end. Can we read it again? He loved them to the end. So Apostle John highlights that the Lord loved them to the end. John speaks of Jesus' love in that way, that he loved them to the end. What on earth does it mean? What does it mean? Loving to the end. You know, most people love to an extent, not to an end. Most of us. Now, personally, I've experienced that. I hate to say it, but that's a fact. As human, it really saddens you. When you're up high up on the corporate ladder, people love you and are willing to do anything you may ask or want. Even things that you don't ask, they do it for you. And they will linger around you. But when you step down, you notice the distance people take away from you. Why? Because they benefit no more from your association. That's the nature of people. People's love is always conditioned. People love until the power or the fame runs out. Even in romantic relationships, most linger until the so-called chemistry stops flowing. I'm still trying to understand what that chemistry is. Until someone more interesting comes along. People, that's what romantic relationships are all about, mostly, sadly. King Solomon says it very clearly. He says, wealth attracts many friends because there is some benefit in that friendship. So now, having read that, verse number 1, let's go to verse number 2 to see who did Jesus love. Look at verse 2. And supper being ended, the devil having already put into the heart of who? Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Let me ask you, church, and be honest about this. Would you love someone knowing that he would stab you at your back? Would you love someone? No. It's hard. But we see that Jesus extended his love to Judas. Jesus loved Judas even though he was not one of his own. The scripture says that. Jesus washed Judas's feet before Judas went to betray the Lord. Jesus had known all along that Judas would betray him. It was not a surprise to Jesus because it's a fulfillment of the scriptures. But listen, church, Judas was not the only one amongst those disciples that Jesus loved. Who else were there? Not only Judas, the one who betrayed him for 30 coins, then we see Peter. Peter, the one who denied knowing him 3 times. Then we see Thomas, the one who doubted the resurrection. But we have all these disciples. The others were not saints. Saints in a different sense. The ones who fought among themselves, as you read the scriptures, you will realize, for the title of most important. They were selfish, self-centered people around the Lord. Despite all of that, he loved them until the end. And he taught them an unforgettable lesson of that kind of love by washing their feet. We study this later. Verse 34 says, a new commandment I give to you, the Lord is telling them, that you love one another. How? As I have loved you. Love the Judases, love the Peters, love the Thomases of your life. This kind of love has nothing to do with sentimentalism. It has nothing to do with good manners filled with hypocrisy or sweet words with the intention of impressing others. The love that Jesus expects from all of us, a love shown through service towards another, considering them, the others, greater than ourselves, even if they are not. Think about this, church. If only couples would capture and practice this kind of love, the kind of love that loves until the end, they wouldn't get divorced. They wouldn't battle it out, rip out each other's heart or their children's through selfish attitudes. Today, sadly, the marriages are getting on to 401. You are excitedly getting onto the highway. The first obstacle that you come, there's a traffic jam, you take the first exit. That's what you see in marriages today. The first obstacle, you leave. Be honest, church. If only in the church everyone would capture and practice this kind of love, the kind of love that loves to the until the end, what a beautiful place this will be. The churches will be packed with people because people need what? Love. People need love. Everybody needs love. That's why the scripture says, for God so loved the world that he did something because he loved the world. So Jesus loved the ones who does not deserve his love. It's easy to love the one who loves you, but the definition of love that we are seeing here, love the undeserving. Everybody say the word undeserving. Undeserving. You love when they hurt you. You love when they stab you. You love when they betray you. You love when they cast doubt at you. So what's the life application we are taking from this first verse? Think of one person in your life that you just cannot love. Maybe it's your workmate. Maybe it's your neighbor. Maybe it's your in-laws who you may be considering them as outlaws. Maybe your siblings. Maybe your spouse. Maybe your wife. Maybe your husband. Maybe your children. Romans 5:8 is very clearly says how God loved us, you and I, while we were still sinners. Christ died. While we were messing up, Christ died. So the life application, I want to ask you a direct question here, church. When was the last time you called a person in the shut-in? Someone who is lonely. Someone who is not cared for by others. So my appeal to all of us, including myself, it starts here in the church. We have to come out of our kumbaya group at the end of the service. Have you ever noticed that you only go to the same person that you meet over and over? I don't know why you are not tired of that person. You go out and have coffee with that person. You go to the other room and have coffee. Go to the washroom with these people. Aren't you tired of it? Come out of the kumbaya group. Reach out to someone that you don't usually talk. Look for one who is seated by himself or herself. Reach out to see how you can pour your love to them. So that's the first thing that we learn. Love the undeserving. The second lesson that we learn, how the Lord has demonstrated his love here. Look at verses 3 to 5. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. By his action, the Lord is teaching us at least three simple things for servant leadership and also for true believers. We need to first understand the foot washing. Look at the map, look at the picture next. At the entrance to every Jewish home was a large pot of water to wash dirty feet. Normally, foot washing was the duty of the lowliest slave. When guests came, he had to go to the door and wash their feet, and it was not a pleasant task. Even the disciples of rabbis were not to wash the feet of their masters. That was uniquely the task of a slave. There are no examples in the ancient literature of a superior washing the feet of an inferior. So now, as Jesus and his disciple all arrived in the upper room, they found that there was no servant to wash their feet. So who is going to wash their feet now? You wonder, why can't these disciples wash each other's feet? So why didn't they? We need to understand the mindset of these people, the so-called disciples. A parallel passage in the book of Luke, it gives us an idea of just how selfish they were and what they were thinking about that evening. Verse 24 of chapter 22 of the Gospel of Luke. Now there was also a dispute among them. What sort of dispute is that? As to which of them should be considered the greatest. The so-called servants of God, the disciples. Who is the greatest? Then Luke records how the Lord rebuked them. He said, "He who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs as he who serves." What a sickening picture that we see here, church. An argument about who is the greatest. No one is going to get down to the ground to wash the feet of the other. The basin was there, the towel was there, and everything was ready, but no one moved to wash others' feet. Church, it's easy to love the human race in the abstract. But when it comes to loving specific, irritating people that you can't avoid in life, the process becomes a lot more difficult. But Jesus demonstrated here in a very unique way. So the rest of the narrative shows us three powerful lessons, and that's what I want us to take today. Verse number 3, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, that he had come from God and was going to do. Powerful verse. It describes who Jesus is here. The Father had given all things into his hand. Apostle John shows us Jesus' authority over all heaven and all earth. That is who Jesus was. So listen, church, the hands that control the universe, including all the angelic hosts, humbly washed the dirty feet of the 12 undeserving disciples. Powerful lesson, isn't it? It looks like I'm the only one who's feeling that way. It's powerful, isn't it? Yes. And so the disciples would have been shocked to have their master and the Lord wash their feet. They were so shocked that they were stunned. They didn't say anything until the Lord came to Peter. He's a big mouth man, and he said, "Oh, you shall never wash my feet." And just bear with me. This technology. This is the last thing that you want. But it happens. That's okay. So Peter says, "You shall never wash my feet." But the Lord said very clearly, "For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done." So how did this to give an example of how we should humbly serve one another? So there are three simple lessons. I'll go very quickly. Number one is humility requires getting your focus off your rights and your needs and onto others' needs. That's the first lesson we are learning here. Simple but powerful. You know, when you read verse 3 and you see that as the eternal Son of God to whom the Father had given all things into his hand, Jesus certainly had the right to even demand the disciples to wash his feet. I'm sure Jesus' feet was equally dirty. But he wasn't focused on his needs or his rights, but rather on the needs of the others. And again, church, how many quarrels in our homes at church and would stop if we would take our eyes off ourselves, our rights, our needs, instead think about the other person's needs. I know in my church there are people who come and sit in one chair. They assume that the chair is theirs. and someone else sits, they will not move to another chair. They'll come and look at the person and say, it's my right. They won't say it, but that's how they show it. Church, if every husband and every wife and every child can do that, your home becomes a happy, happy home. If every believer can do this, you become a powerful testimony for God's glory. So the first lesson that we see here is that take your eyes off your rights and needs and focus on the others. And the second lesson that we take from this narrative is that humility recognizes that no task is beneath us to do for Christ's sake. No task. When it comes to kingdom's work, there is no task that is beneath us to do for Christ. If Jesus can stoop down to wash the feet of the disciples, what task can be beneath to do for Christ? So if you are a true servant of God, before you seek to be in the limelight, I know today I'm in the limelight, but before I seek to come here, drawing the focus of the public, be focused on doing the menial tasks that no one wants to touch. How many of you here, don't put your hands up, have gone and washed the toilets or the washrooms in this sanctuary? Don't put your hands up. How many of you have picked up all the trash at the end of the service? Or how many have left the bottles behind? Someone else will do it. If in the church you have to clean up the washrooms, pick up the trash, do it unto the Lord. Never think a task is beneath your dignity or calling. This is the house of God. This is a sign of a true servant. So the second lesson is no task is beneath us to do for Christ's sake. And the third lesson and the final lesson is so powerful. From this demonstration of love and from Peter's reaction, there's a powerful lesson to learn. And let me tell you what the lesson will explain to you. The third lesson is abandon false pretense of humility. Abandon false pretense of humility. Listen, church, it's easy to serve and to give those in need, hear me out of pride. Out of pride. And you go on a missions field, you can take lots of pictures standing there, and then this is what I'm doing, out of pride. Out of pride. You had to do it because of accountability purposes. You don't do it out of pride. As you read John's narrative, one would think that it's Peter's humility, his own sense of unworthiness before Jesus, that caused him to say no to the Lord washing the feet, isn't it? That's how we would see that. No, Lord, don't wash my feet. I'm not worthy. But careful study would reveal that it did not stem from humility, but from pride. Everybody say the word pride. Pride, that's what it is. It is really the expression of internal personal pride of Peter. It embarrassed him to think that Jesus washing his feet, if Jesus is to wash his feet, in Peter's mind that implies that his feet were dirty and that needs washing. Church, not all pride is chest thumping and loud-mouthed. Some pride hides behind a false humility. We act the part of humility and then take pride in our fine performance. We would know the character of Peter as we read through the text. In the Luke narrative, gives a clear picture of who Peter was. In Luke 22, just after the Last Supper, the disciples were arguing about what? Who is the greatest? And who was there in the midst of them? Peter was in the midst of them. And who would be the greatest? And the Lord rebuked them. So Judas was not the only apostle about whom Jesus had concern on the night of this Last Supper. All of them had demonstrated arrogance and pride toward one another with the people they had been called to serve as a group. Finally, Jesus looked into the eyes of the man he considered to be the very center of the problem. Who was it? Peter. Look at Luke 22, verse 31. And the Lord turns to Peter and said this, "Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as a wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. But when you are returned to me, strengthen your brethren." But you know what? Even then, we see that Peter has not learned his lesson. And we read that he says, Peter says, "Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death." Who is watching his proclamation here? All the other disciples. And in Matthew's narrative, we see Peter's response as this. In 35, he says, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." Who is watching that? All the other 11 were watching. Peter was actually offended by Jesus' action. Because Peter knows that if he were a teacher, he would never consider stooping to wash someone's feet because it would be beneath him. So this is a rebuke to his self-sufficiency. He doesn't want Jesus to wash his feet. This is a revelation of the sinful pride of our own hearts, church, which often cloaks itself with the guise of humility. When we are really insisting on our self-sufficiency, we do not want to admit to anybody that we need anything. I'll give an example. There was this church, certainly not KWCF, not SEF. They decided to appoint a person to the board. And they brought his name up, and he got up. He got up and he wanted to show his great humility. So he said, "I am not worthy for this position. There are more qualified people, better Christians than myself, Pastor. Why don't you choose them? I have anger issues and I am not that dependable." Now, when he made that statement, he sat down proud of how humble he must have appeared to everyone. But what he didn't realize, there was one fellow in the church, he got up and said, "I second everything this fellow said." He got so mad, he said, "How dare you say such terrible things about me?" So pride has a way of staying hidden even from you. Typically, prideful people think that they are among God's most humble children. If this describes the attitude of your heart, it may be time to get the opinion of another person on the current status of your pride. You know, the best person who will tell you about you will be your spouse, your children, your parents. Turn to your spouse, turn to your children and ask them, "Am I a prideful person?" I want you to go home together, so don't ask the questions here. Pride, however, is not just a normal little sin. By its very essence, it is one of the most destructive sins a person can ever commit. It is destructive because it blinds people to the counsel and help they need in their walk with the Lord. Even worse is the fact that pride produces deceptive confidence that only keeps these individuals from seeking the help of people, but it also keeps them from seeking the help of God. Today, we see there are many Christian leaders succumb to this. Many leaders are proud of their good works. They are proud of all that they do for others. They view themselves as having clean feet. It would embarrass them to admit that their feet are dirty and Jesus needs to wash them. They are quick to tell all around to wash the others' feet, but would never admit of their own need. So this morning, it's been a wonderful journey of 50 years, and I know your dear pastor. He's such a wonderful man of God. I'm not saying this because I'm standing here. I've said this many times to many people around. I consider it a great honor and a privilege to be, I would call it, a Timothy, and I consider him as my Paul. Because I learned a lot of lessons from him. A humble, simple, down-to-earth servant of God. Again, I'm not here to elevate him. I'm here to elevate the Lord who made him this way. So I give all glory, honor, and praise to the Lord. So I don't want you to think that it's for vain glory. It is for his glory. I'm saying this. So to serve in the vineyard, which all of us are called to do, we're all called to be in the ministry of reconciliation. First, you've got to recognize that your feet are filthy. You've got to recognize that you need continuous cleansing. You need to love the undeserved. You need to consider others greater than yourself. You need to place others before your rights. You need to know that no task is beneath you to do for Christ's sake. But most importantly, you need to abandon false pretense of humility. May this be the cry of every Christian leader. Coming up from KWCF, coming up from my church, coming up from around the globe. Then, one day, the Lord will look at us and say what? Well done, thou good and faithful servant. May the Lord bless you. May the Lord raise men and women for his vineyard from KWCF in the years and decades to come. God bless you.